This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 141 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, everyone? What's up, Tristan? 141. What's up?
Yeah, man, we got George Foreman in the house, the master griller, the boxer, the legend, one of our favorite people of all time.
Yeah, man, say that again. George Foreman, man, he is on the Mount Rushmore. It was my father's favorite heavyweight. This guy is the other half of the Rumble in the Jungle.
Yeah, for sure. For a guy that's fought the best, you know, he's one of the first people to knock out Joe Frazier. You know what I mean? He did it in two rounds.
A young Foreman, too, when he did that.
I guess the Rumble in the Jungle was probably, you know, up there in probably the top five greatest events in
sporting history. Yeah, definitely the number one boxing match. But like you said, sporting event, iconic moment in American sports history.
Yeah.
Between two of the greatest heavyweights of all time. And
I guess it was more than just a fight.
Yeah, it was. And they went to, you know, Zaire and it was aired globally. Two iconic figures. And my favorite thing about that fight, guys listening, you can YouTube this, is Ali at the press conference. I would talk about this back in the day. Ali at the press conference the night before with all the media there. And you can see the video of this. And you just see Ali so offended by the media. And he's pointing at him and he goes, "I know you got him. I know you picked him." He goes, "I'll show you how great I am."
Yeah.
And that's what. And it was like to be part of that, win, lose, or draw, you know.
Yeah, it's an incredible thing that the fact that he came back at such an old age, you know.
10 years off.
I think he gave people hope. And I think George then gave people hope, which I'm sure we'll touch on in the interview, the fact that, you know, they came back. You know, it's easy to be a 20-year-old young gun, but to do it in your 30s and 40s and achieve
50s
gives people hope, I reckon.
Yeah, the interesting thing also is when I was going around asking people about Foreman, you know, before we did the interview, and how many people know George from just the grill?
Yeah.
And it's going to be awesome to shed some insight and some light and remind people.
The real story.
Yeah, remind people the greatness that is George Foreman.
For sure. Guys, just before we get George on, big thank you to everyone tuning into the show, leaving messages of support, either it was email or social media. I really enjoy it. And please get in touch.
Yeah, continue to do that. It would take too long to thank everyone individually. So as you said, TK, we thank everyone for the support, all the messages. We're really responsive to those. So feel free to reach out to us. Tell your friends about the show. Continue to support the Vision Board.
For sure, guys. So remember, subscribe by iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. And if you can, on iTunes, if you could please leave us a 5-star review. Just helps us get a little bit more noticed, and we can continue to bring some great shows and reach a few more people.
For sure. 141, man. We're just getting started.
All right, guys. I know you've been waiting for it. So here is George Foreman.
It makes me warm now.
All right, our special guest is George Foreman. George is a legend of boxing, having won the heavyweight title twice. In November 1994, he defeated Michael Mora to become the oldest heavyweight champion in history. His distinguished career included an Olympic gold medal in 1968.
Post-boxing, George has continued to flourish. He is one of the best entrepreneurs in the world, while also an ordained minister. We welcome George Foreman. George, welcome to the show, my man.
It's really nice to hear from you.
Excellent, George. So we were talking recently to a couple of your, you know, we had Holyfield on, we had Larry Holmes on, and we like asking the question. You were brought up this video of you back in the day hitting the bag with your hooks, and I just had to ask you, do you ever hit the bag anymore?
You know, I do. I keep a little punching bag in my home, and for the sole purpose of burning calories now, nothing like burning up anybody, just burning calories.
Do you still shadow box? Do you still pretend that you're in Zaire or you're back in America winning the title? Do you still do that, George?
Well, working out, boxing is a great workout, but there's nothing that, you know, that I get intense like I had in my older day. But every now and then I'll shadow box just for a little fun, beating the air, I call it. And it's simple and not that much, though.
All right, so I'm going to start this with, so you shared the ring with Frazier twice, Norton, Ali, and then the second part of your career, you had Moore, Holyfield, and Briggs, and it leads to my question now of the modern-day heavyweight. You know, this Sunday in Australia, AJ Anthony Joshua is going to be fighting. Do any of those guys scare you?
Well, I have no fear of them because I don't have to fight them anymore. You know, they are good fighters. Anthony Joshua, Klitschko, these are real good fighters. They could have existed in any era, so I have a lot of respect for them.
Yeah. George, in terms of your keys to success, you know, George Foreman, before losing the title, George Foreman, the one that came back, and then George Foreman, the successful entrepreneur, were the principles all the same?
You know what? It's pretty much the same. You got to start from the bottom and work your way up. If you don't do that, there is no success. So basically, and you got to fight. You got to take a lot of punches. You got to get up and act as though it didn't hurt. Same thing I did in the amateurs, I did in the pros, and then as a businessman.
And, you know, modern day now, what sort of things are you still putting yourself in those scenarios? How are you testing yourself each day?
I still work out, and of course, I pay attention to my diet like I'm a soldier of some sort. So I'm always in the mix as far as being physically fit, because I like to present myself. I like to wear a lot of clothes. But there's always the challenge of getting up in the morning and being prepared to do something new. I like that idea.
Yeah, nice one. One person I wanted to ask you about was Sonny Liston, because with all the stories about Ali and Frazier, people don't realize that you first started as one of Sonny's sparring partners. Can you tell us a few stories about Sonny and what you learned from him?
Well, I was actually stable mates with Sonny Liston. My manager, Dick Sadler, was also Sonny Liston's manager. And the wonderful thing is I could get in there and spar with Sonny Liston, and it boosted my confidence like nothing. Because after a while, I could really handle myself with him. Not at first, but he was no doubt the toughest man I'd ever been in the ring with. He never took one step backwards from me. I had to box him.
George, and you could you share some insight? Because as our show's evolving and we're chatting with legends like yourself, you know, Larry Holmes was in the Ali, you know, Ali sparring partner. Holyfield sparred with Tyson. You just mentioned Sonny Liston. Is this something that still goes on today in modern boxing?
I have no idea because I was basically not in Liston's camp. I had won an Olympic gold medal, and I chose Dick Sadler to be my manager. And he was at the same time managing and training Sonny Liston, and it helped me out because I could introduce his shows and of course, I sparred with him, and I learned how to behave myself with the media and that thing by way of the association with Sonny Liston. I don't know whether it would work today or not.
Did you attend the Ali and Sonny Liston first or second fight?
I was not even in boxing at the time.
Okay. Because I was just going to ask me a question.
I heard the first one on radio.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask you, being friends with Sonny first, and then, you know, over time, at first you hated Ali, and then you became best friends. My question was going to be, did you dislike Ali because he took Sonny Liston's title?
Muhammad Ali, of course, was the most renowned person. I'd be walking home from high school, and all the kids were boasting about this man making jokes. He even had music, and he had poems. So he was the first one I'd seen on television, and everybody loved seeing him on television, the same as I did. I liked him. I became a boxer. He was already in exile, so I didn't have much exposure to him then. Of course, when it was time for me to box him, I even didn't dislike him then. But after I lost the title to him, oh, did I hate him. He took my title.
Do you still feel that energy when that rumble in the jungle?
I'll never forget that moment. I'll never forget the moment of the rumble in the jungle. I thought I had it won. Then I lost the fight. And, of course, you lose something like that, you never really, the moment never goes out of your mind, because you think, if I had done this, if I had done that. Then I fought Michael Moore for the title almost 20 years later, and all of the skeletons started to disappear.
Yeah,
I could actually live with I had lost my championship 20 years earlier.
Yeah, George, Tristan and I are both strength coaches down here in Sydney, and your physique, man, your whole career, what sort of training was going on back then? Were you doing all weights? Share with us some little insights on that.
Well, I didn't do any weights until I came back. I made a comeback into boxing, and I started dealing with weights to rehab. If I'd hurt myself, I found that the weightlifting in different areas would help strengthen it and rehabilitate you. So that was all I used the weightlifting was for rehabilitation. But the first career, I didn't touch weightlifting at all. It was about chopping wood with the axe, digging holes in the ground, carrying a wheelbarrow filled with gravel, all those things, manual labor.
Tough practice. Just taking you back to Zaire for a minute, Congo, George, what was that experience like? Because you traveled over there as the champion, yet they had this love for Muhammad Ali. How was that to deal with?
I didn't hear that last part of that question.
I just said going back over to the Congo for the rumble in the jungle. My question was, when you guys went over there, it just seemed that they painted you as the bad guy and Ali as, you know, their savior, you know, the guy that they loved. How did that sit with you mentally?
That's not true history. I had as many fans in Africa as Muhammad did.
Yeah.
He was, of course, loved and admired all over the world, but believe me, that place had a lot of George Foreman fans, and there was a lot of betting going on, and the betting favored me. there were a lot of angry Africans when I left because they had lost their money.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What was the first thing you did when you got back to your dressing room?
Oh, you know, you saw it. Nobody want to lose a fight.
Mm.
No one want to lose a fight. I was upset. I was upset about it. And I sat there and, you know, you reminisce of what could have been done, but I was more than anything else. I was so tired.
And what was the biggest thing that you learnt from your first defeat?
Oh, you know, I thought, man, I'm champion of the world. I got to do this. Champion of the world. I got to do that. And so, I didn't like that part of it. Then after I lost the championship of the world, I realized how much I truly loved being champion and how precious it was. And how horrible it was to lose that title. Mm. You only know that once you've had it and lost it.
George, I grew up in Northeast Ohio, and in the early, I think it was the early 90s, you had the sitcom on TV. I always wanted to ask you, were you freestyling your lines, or were they actually like scripted and You had to rehearse those lines.
I think that was a big trouble. I didn't follow directions.
What was that like?
I had a lot of fun with it, and they were just letting me be myself.
I remember the show. Like, sure. Was that ever a plan of yours as a young boy to become, like, you know, you're an icon, and then you were famous on TV for multiple different careers. Was that ever a plan of yours as a young boy?
You know, I was doing some commercials once, and I was getting ready to fight Jerry Cooney. Mm. And I got a telephone call in that night. And someone said, "Hey, George," and I said, "Who is this?" In my room, hotel room in Atlantic City, it was Bill Cosby. And we talked for a long time and was happy to hear from him. At that time, he was one of the most recognizable figures around with his TV show.
Yeah.
And I said, "Hey, Bill, people are calling me to do these commercials and things like that. What do you think?" "I don't know if I should." He said, "Listen, George, every young boy dreams of being on television, seeing his face on the screen. Don't act like you're any different. Enjoy your moment." He said, "I'll do the commercials if you don't want." And from that point on, I took off and I really understood as a boy, I really wanted to be on television like any other boy.
Yeah. Can we take you back to your childhood in Houston? Because I know that your family wasn't, you know, they weren't the richest in the world, and, you know, you had your own troubled youth. What do you try to teach the children of today, mate?
Well, the most important thing, the point you want to get out to all kids, is that starting from the bottom is not a curse. Everybody can be given a chance if they want a chance, but there's so much work involved. There's so many ups and downs. People say, "George, you had a great career." No one realized that I was knocked down in one of my boxing matches. Most embarrassing moment. When I first started, I wanted to say, "I quit." And I did quit a few times. But there's nothing wrong with the struggle of trying to work your way up. And I teach young people that.
Yeah. So what? When you quit, what brought you back?
Well, there was that profound... I was broke. The most profound reason at all to come back to boxing. I spent all my money, and I didn't want to box, but it was the only profession I knew.
What was the biggest difference that... Because you took what? Wasn't it 10 years off?
There was 10 years I not so much as made a fist. I didn't box. I didn't shadow box. As a matter of fact, I didn't even like being thought of as an ex-boxer. I was a preacher.
Yeah. And what? So you mentioned the money drew you back, and you know you were broke. When you came back after that 10 years, what was the biggest thing that you know the body was a little bit older? How about your style? Did you go in there knowing that you had to change up your style?
I did have to change the style. I left out of boxing. My hands were quick, not only just in delivering punches. And deliver a knockout punch, you have to be strong, but it has to be faster than the guy can cover up. When I came back, I would parry punches in my first career, stop them before they get started. When I came back, I couldn't do it. The parrying. And so I had to learn a new style to put my hand in position, keep them in position so I wouldn't get hit. And that was trying to me. I had to learn to box.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
George, who did you hit the very cleanest, like in terms of one punch and you just connected and it was flush? Do you remember any fight where you just know that moment when you just knock him out and it was your biggest punch ever?
And it would always happen by coincidence, because sometimes I'd be throwing a volley of punches. And that one hit out of that 8 punches, and I knew that would be it. I knew that. But as I got older, I started to calculate a little better, and I would only throw those punches that I knew were going to be the last one.
And I heard you talk about being hit the hardest. Everyone thinks it's Ali, but it's really Ron Lyle. Can you tell us about that experience with Ron?
Yeah, I'd never been hit so hard that I didn't feel anything. It was like, boom, and I was like, what am I doing on the canvas? How did this happen? And your legs do not obey you. That's a frightening, hard punch to be hit with. Ron Lyles did it in the 70s.
And sorry to keep bringing back up Muhammad Ali, but I've just got to ask, for someone that you used to hate, you fought, how did you guys go from being rivals and enemies to being best friends?
I think deep down we were always best friends, because I admired him. And Muhammad Ali had come back into boxing. He saw my rise to prominence as well. And when he knew, we all knew we had so much in common, but because we were in this sport of being one camp to the other, we separated ourselves. But after boxing, a couple of times he called me up on the telephone asking me, once when I just left boxing, he begged me to come back to boxing so I could beat Ken Norton for him. He was honest with me. He said, George, they're going to make me fight Norton, or they're going to take my title. He said, and George, I can't beat him, but you can. He's afraid of you. He said, come back, George, and I'll give you a shot, but don't let them. They're going to take it and give it to Norton. And from that point on, we were friends. We talked all the time. But I told him, nah, I would never come back to boxing. And it was 10 years later that I did come back.
George, are there any stories floating around, like, you know, post, you guys, Evander Holyfield shared a story with us about, you know, he was on a jet with Bill Clinton, the president at the time in the 90s. Was there ever a moment when it hit you in your career when you're like, holy crap, like, I'm famous, and, you know, you found yourself around, you know, maybe celebrities? Could you share a story with us?
Let's see, I just won a gold medal. And I was called by this William Barris production to come to Hollywood. They had, at that time, a real famous show called The Dating Game.
Yep.
And they asked me to be on as one of the contestants. And I sat there in the audience, and I realized, man, I'm a celebrity. I'm on television. I never got over that one moment. Never. That was tops. And that was enough to make me think I was truly a celebrity.
Yeah, The Dating Game. Did you win?
Nah.
What?
I didn't win, but I was a winner. I was a winner just by being there.
Yeah, nice one. All right, George.
I was so cool. Everybody saw me on that thing, and boy, did I get girlfriends.
Yeah.
All right.
I was no longer watching celebrities. I started looking in the mirror and seeing one in myself.
How much of that mindset, how important, though, that self-belief, George? You know, like, you probably had an understanding that you were meant for greatness. Could you give our fans a little bit of insight on the importance of having that mindset to be successful?
Yeah, success was very important to me. From that point on, after winning that gold medal, I had never had a dream to come true in my life. After that moment, I stood on that platform listening to them playing the national anthem, and I just thought, this is impossible. I'm going to wake up in a minute, and it's going to be a dream. I never woke up to this day. From that point on, I knew that any dream was possible. All I had to do was apply myself and sacrifice. Anything is achievable.
Yeah, so all those years back then, you were a bit of a visionary. Did you like setting goals for yourself?
I was a 19-year-old boy. I never had anything to happen like that.
That's very interesting. Just a couple of things I want to ask you. Pre-fight, 15 minutes before you get into the arena and you're about to trade blows with some of the most dangerous people in the world, What are you doing?
Well, you're back there trying to, your manager, especially in my earlier days, my manager, Dick Sadler, would strike me out. This guy's got nothing. Can't take a punch. Got a glass jaw. Doesn't have a jab. And you get out there and knock him out. I was nervous, but when he started that conversation, I was ready to go. But I remember the night, Jamaica, time to fight Joe Frazier. And I've seen that Joe Frazier, the most deadly fighter I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And he looked at me, Dick Sadler looked at me that night, and he said, I told him, don't even go there. We knew we had the fight of my life on my hand. Don't even start that stuff.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Actually, George, I wanted to...
I was nervous. I was nervous. The most nervous and frightened I'd ever been before or after.
Was that when you fought Joe Frazier? Was that in the lead-up? Was that the first time you had met him? Why I asked that is because Joe was a lot smaller than you, so I wanted to ask you, when was the first time that you met him in person, and what was your first impression of him?
Oh, I met Joe Frazier, of course, prior to his boxing match with Jimmy Ellis, I'm sure. We did a little publicity show, and I met him at a bowling alley. That was the first time. He was real strong-willed. Intelligent man, shook my hand, made me shake hands with his wife, and I realized he looked like a piece of rock.
Yeah, I wanted to touch base a little bit about, there's stories floating around the internet about the infancy of the George Foreman grill, and when we put up on our social media that we were going to have you on, I was getting these messages that, like, You were supposed to go to a business meeting. Hulk Hogan was involved. One thing led to...
That's not true.
Could you share the truth with us?
No. I was really a hit on Madison Avenue. I'd done commercial for Doritos, Monarchy, yep. Pepsi Cola, Burger King. McDonald's, I'm sorry. I'd done all these commercials, and a friend said, George, you're doing all these commercials, you're making everybody else wealthy. Why don't you get your own product? And I said, sure. And we started searching for the right product. And finally, we found this grill, not in its present form, of course. And they convinced me, look, let's form this joint venture. I'd signed my name to it. I'd get the lion's share of the product, and I would promote it when I didn't have anything else to do. That's how the grill came about. Started off a few here, a few there, and eventually sold over $120 million.
Yeah, I had
before I sold the grill.
Yeah, I had five. Johnny had five too.
I had the big one in my college campus in my dorm, and I had two little ones too to travel with. So thank you.
Yeah, that thing was just what I needed. When I did the deal, all I expected was about 16 grills, one for my aunt, some for my uncles, a couple on my ranch, and one to travel with. I never expected that thing to be so successful. Never.
Well, before the grill came out, I know you were talking about doing commercials and things, but did you have any other business ventures that went pretty well as well?
I had a lot of, I'm always in business since I'd left boxing. 77, I tried everything. Some would go well, but most did not.
Mm.
The shotgun effect, you shoot, nothing's going to stick. Finally, the grill did stick, along with boxing, the return to boxing.
Yeah. Is that the kind of same philosophy you were talking before about starting at the bottom and working your way up? Did you kind of bring that into your business career as well?
That's right. That grill was nowhere. It was nothing. Nobody gave it a joke. Everybody joked about it.
Yeah.
But I started working and traveling and mentioning it, interviews and the whole thing, and next thing you know, it caught on. The word of mouth did it.
Did it make you pleased with the fact that, you know, it was actually contributing to a healthier lifestyle? Did that side of things also kind of make it even better for you?
Right. And that's how I sold it, because I needed to get the protein in, but I didn't need the grease. Mm. And this slanted grill was enabled me to do the protein meats, and the grease would slide out and stay, and the meat would stay moist. So I really had it made for me physically, and doctors were telling their patients to use it.
Wow. All right, George, we've come to the personality part of our interview. Now, Johnny has got the first question.
All right, George Foreman, if three of your closest friends were sitting at a table and you weren't in the room, what sort of things would they be saying about you?
He's going to eat everything. Hide your food.
All right, next question. When you were growing up, George, what posters did you have on your childhood wall?
What most? I didn't hear the question.
Sorry, when you were growing up, what posters did you have on your childhood wall growing up?
And the sad thing about growing up the way I did, posters did not exist. I never saw one until I was about winning the Olympic gold medal. I started seeing posters, and they weren't of me.
And George, we use this platform to provide inspiration and insights for our fans. So could you leave a little advice for people listening who maybe are struggling with some adversity right now?
And I tell all my kids this too, that forgiveness is the subtle thread that binds both love and friendship. And if you can forgive everyone who's done something to you, you'll have so many friends. Without it, you may not end up with a homie with your mom and dad if you don't forgive.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. George, just on your children, all your sons are named George, and also I know all your children are college educated. So my question is, why did you name all your kids after you, and what's the importance of a college education?
Well, I was hit by Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali, Ken Norton, Evander Holyfield, and you just tell me how many names you can come up with after that.
More Holyfield, Briggs.
I tell them, but I wanted my children to have something in common, something that would always unite them, and they would always know where they were, no matter where in the world they would gravitate to, but to know that they belong to something.
Yeah.
And probably the greatest day of my life now, and I'm getting ready to watch my last one. He will enter college this spring. This fall, to get a college education, because that's what I was fighting for. The most horrible thing in the world, I woke up one day, I was a middle-aged man, I was broke, and I didn't qualify for a job. I didn't even have a college education. With all of that money, you would think I was protected. I was not. So I try to tell those kids, go to college. Get yourself a good education so you can support yourself and your children without having to box.
Very well said, man. Your moral code is second to none. George, before we let you go, we have one question left. You're hosting a private dinner party. You get to invite 5 people to this dinner party. They can't be any family or friends. Who are you inviting?
Donald Trump. Halle Berry, my wife, Jim Brown, the football player. Did I go too many already?
You got one more, George.
And you.
That's sweet. All right, George, before I let you go, actually, I wanted to ask you, if you had one more chance to sit in a room with Muhammad Ali, what would you say to him?
I would just hug him. I wish I had hugged him and kissed him some more. I mean, I never gave him a kiss. I wish I had.
It's awesome, man.
That's beautiful. For everyone at home, start following George. He's online, www.georgeforeman.com. Across Twitter and Facebook, he's on the same channels. Anything else that you might want to share with the fans out there, George?
No, I'm fine. Doing fine. I think there was a lot of good questions and answers.
Well, George, just on behalf of myself and Johnny as well, you know, you were a bit of you're an idol. You're a hero of both of ours growing up, and to spend half an hour with you, you know, you've just made my day, my week, my year. So, Thank you so much.
Yeah, and George, you were my father passed away a few years back. You were his favorite fighter, man. So thanks for stopping by the show and sharing the space with us.
Stay in touch, guys. Stay in touch.
Johnny, that was George Foreman.
Yeah, man, that was a treat for both of us. It was one of these interviews that, you know, guys listening, sometimes Tris and I have to be a little bit selfish in what we want to do with the show and being boxing background, and, you know, he's an all-time great. It was awesome to talk to this guy.
Yeah, it was one of those bucket list moments, wasn't
it? For sure.
The fact that we got to speak to someone like I still even remember, I'm sure we'll touch it on the Friday show, is that, you know, when we were king, sometimes I used to like George a little bit, and I sometimes wish that George won, but when you think about it, I guess, changing history, we don't get to see the greatness that George became, so maybe it was better off that he did lose that fight.
Exactly, and we touched base on that. You know, he wins that fight, who knows if we're even talking to him? You know, we can't rewrite history, but, you know, half the people know George from his business ventures, and who would have known if he would ever dove into that, if he would have, you know, beat Ali that fight?
Yeah, for sure. So we'll touch back on that on Friday, but Wednesday we've got a special guest, Dr. Tom Bellella. Tom, we've connected through Joe DeFranco, one of our good friends on the show, and it's an interesting one because I've been doing a little bit of research on things like blood work and just really just in that nutrition side really intrigues me. So he'll have some really valuable insights on some of the work that he's doing now and some of the work that he's done with Joe.
Yeah, the guru used to help coach the New York Jets, worked with them, another Jersey boy, that energy, be prepared.
I think, guys, because there's going to be some really great take-home points that you can probably start applying in your everyday life.
Yeah, man, this guy, it's where the vision board is really stepping its game up, having guys like the guru on in terms of like dropping some signs, dropping some bombs.
Yeah, for sure. So check it out Wednesday, wrap-up show Friday, and we'll check you guys soon.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and, you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.